Jacinta Parsons is a broadcaster in Melbourne. She runs an afternoon show on the ABC. Jacinta is also the author of the book Unseen, which is about living with Crohn's disease and chronic illness. And recently, she has separated from her partner and discovered a new loneliness. Jacinta has also been writing about discovering how to turn loneliness into a love of solitude. Good morning, Jacinta.
Good morning, Susanna. How exciting. Across the ditch, as they say in the old parlance. Really nice to join you.
It's feeling and sounding like you're in the room, so let's take advantage of that.
Yes, let's pretend we are, for sure.
Your relationship of 25 years ended. As you say, you literally moonwalked out of each other's lives.
I know that sounds rather ridiculous, doesn't it? But actually, we did. We moonwalked in. You know, in those early moments of romance where you try and do impressive things like moonwalk, my ex-partner was pretty good at forwards and backwards moonwalk. Have you seen forwards, which is quite hard to achieve? And so we sort of thought after 25 years, so many things, so much to our relationship after that time, including two children. But we came to a really respectful understanding that it was time for us to see what might become of everything if we did it separately.
You talk about arrangements for how would you live now with each other without each other.
I know, it's really, it's a surprising experience, I have to say, all of it for me. I thought I knew what it was. But even and when you have dependent children or a life that you've lived or even extended family that become part of your life, like mother-in-laws and brother-in-laws, they're all become that in 25 years, they're part of who you are. So it really was about trying to work out how do you begin again new but still maintain the integrity and the honour of the life that you have lived together, even though some of the things that perhaps have separated you are difficult and challenging parts of the relationship. It sort of became really clear that we had to really decenter that part of our relationship and find a way to begin again. Doesn't mean that we were joyful about it. Lots of stuff was really challenging. But ultimately, that was the aim, that we would spend a really concerted amount of time and thought into that separation process.
How long did that process take, like before you actually moonwalked away?
The way you say that makes it sound so gorgeous. I want to just hear that all the time. It probably took, I mean, it's an ongoing process, I think. So the decision was made. And then it was probably a couple of months before we could physically find our spaces to be different. Because there's so much in this, isn't there? There's a financial question, there's logistics, there's children. It's a really complicated beast. Who's going to stay? Who's going to go? How will that all work? So it took us a couple of months before we could physically be in separate homes. And that process was really challenging too, because you are really starting to think about a different type of future for yourself while you are still enmeshed in that daily closeness and physical kind of relationship with somebody. Not the relationship, but in proximity, I suppose.
And did you stay in the home that you already had, or did you have to find a new one? You stayed.
I stayed, and my ex-partner found a new space that was only like 700 metres from where we are, with the consideration of the dependent child that we have, that he could easily move between the different spaces.
And you were sharing the care of your one dependent child, and that meant that you were home alone for weeks at a time, and at first you loved it.
Oh my goodness, the absolute, because I mean it's been a forever story that I have never really had my space to myself. So I think especially after having children who sort of glue themselves to your body for a long period of their early years, and just the whole setup of family life when it's set up in the way that ours was, in that very kind of traditional nuclear kind of feel, is you are long periods of just absolutely in service of others and close with others. And, you know, it's beautiful. It's family life. But I was sort of Well, not sort of. I was too excited, one would say, and I apologize to my ex-partner for the obvious excitement that it would be that I would have space to myself. And initially it was just this wonderful thought that being by yourself is this true liberty, you know, a liberation from what perhaps your 48, 49 years had been previously.
So how did the alone time start to feel lonely as you write?
It was a real shocking experience, this, in some ways, because I thought I had a handle on it. And I have always felt really independent, even though I have been surrounded by family. I've always seen myself and prided myself on thinking of myself as a separate identity. You know, you sort of think of yourself as I'm also a mother and I'm a partner, but I'm always me. And so I was a bit naive, I think, to how entrenched I had become into the roles that I had played previously. So probably it was about a month or a couple of weeks even. It wasn't long, and it was around Christmas, so I think that also compounded the experience of realizing and having a full reckoning with, oh my goodness, now it is just me. You know, one of our children had already moved out of home. We have one dependent. That is obviously going to be an experience that he will go through as well. And I realized, wow, I am now just me. Nobody necessarily needs to know on those weeks where I don't have the children what I'm doing. Nobody has that level of interest in my life that I had previously taken for granted, I suppose. And even small things like going to the doctors or filling out forms where the question is, who's your closest kin? I was like, I don't know who my emergency contact is anymore. Like, it's always just been something I hadn't even thought about. It's just, you know, my ex-partner was my close contact. And with aging parents and all that sort of shift in life, I began to have a real sense that aloneness could be quite lonely.
What were the worst aspects?
It was feeling like and trying to understand that my worth wasn't wrapped up into the things that I did for other people in my family. And again, I was naive because I didn't think that I actually bought or believed that stuff. But I was like, well, if you're not cooking for somebody else, what does it matter if you cook at all? Or why would I even have a Christmas tree if my child is only there for half the time? Is it, you know, worth it? Am I worth it? All of those questions coming very close to bear. What is my worth if I am now by myself? If no one really knows, if I'm doing anything at all, does anything at all matter? That was some really challenging, very strong feelings. And also having bad days and coming home to an empty place and not having that shorthand that you become accustomed to when you live in a family of saying, oh, I had a really bad day. Everyone knows the backstory, or everybody has already encountered some of the reasons why perhaps the bad day happened again, and you just get to get it off your chest and have some feedback and get some love given to you from people who know you very well. Without that stuff, I realized it's really I found it really painful.
And were you a matter of weeks in?
I think so. I think the change around the excitement probably was weeks to, you know, it wasn't long. It was probably about around a month even, where the reality of that separation and me individualizing in some aspects of my life really became quite clear.
Was there a particular moment when it just hit you, or was it sort of a slow descent?
I think there were a number of those moments, including, you know, Father's Day was one of them, Christmas, all of those celebrations that come up that are, you know, and when you've been embedded in a family for decades and your entire life, pretty much your own, and then the one that you create outside of your family, of your childhood, you realize how geared the world is to the family experience. And rightly so, and there's nothing wrong with that. But there was a real sense of being on the outer with those things. And for the first time, and it's really not a personality trait of mine, I looked longingly at the families of friends that I have going, wow, what have I done? What have I done to have changed that very nature of my own family in the way that I did? And then again, that this real searing sense of aloneness and loneliness crept in.
RNZ National, this is Sunday Morning. I'm Susanna Leahtawa, speaking with Jacinta Parsons, broadcaster with the ABC in Melbourne, who discovered how to turn loneliness into a love of solitude. Jacinta, were you able to tell your friends how you were feeling?
Yes, absolutely. And, you know, it's probably a very common story. You know, you go and hang out with a friend, you might have a drink, you might go for a walk, you might meet for a coffee. These very siloed, you might call them on the phone, you might send a text. But it felt very different to sharing your life with the flow and the fluidity that you have in a household. So I had, you know, great support, which is a really, I think I felt so deeply the importance of the relationships in those very early days with my family, my immediate family, my brothers and sisters. I really felt that I would have been lost without them, without that sense of place somewhere. And again, that fear of far out, what happens if you don't have a place? You know, if you are all alone, what does it all mean? But they provided, you know, that very beautiful and needed clarity and somewhere to put the things that were inside me. But it didn't happen in the same way as family life can, where it's all the time. You can constantly have those interactions with family when they're around you all the time.
You write that there was a moment when you realised that solitude is a very different concept to that of being alone. How did you turn the loneliness into an appreciation of solitude?
This is the gem, and also something I guess I'd been thinking about my whole life, and we all do. Who am I? Who am I? And the real question of who am I without a relationship with others? If I am just by myself, who am I? I was always so fascinated, and I wrote about that, with people that take solitude as an activity, as a pastime almost, go on those long walks by yourself to be entirely without relationship, to see who you are without all the myriads of sorts of people that we are with other people. And this is what began to open up the question of who am I? And I suppose there was a kindness and a lightness about that as well, trying to not take that question too seriously and to see the younger me as well, the me before I became a very, you know, integral part of another family outside of my childhood one. Who was that girl? Who am I? Were the real questions around this next part, which is about solitude as opposed to loneliness and being alone.
How do you articulate the difference, or how do you define solitude? Let's go there.
And it's a newly formed experience. Obviously, I know of the concept, but to experience it is to really sit in and expand yourself in that solitude, the solitary life. So rather than viewing the experience as lack or without, which is, I think, where the yearning and loneliness is, if you see your individual self as being missing of something, which was the first reaction of mine, I was missing the identity that I'd always had in a family. Solitude became a different pursuit of seeing, if I lean into this, if I am celebrating the experience of the solitary, what does it look like? What do I like? Who am I by myself? What are the things that I can explore without the responsibility of a relationship?
And what does it look like?
It's so good. This is the hilarious flip side to it all, is, and I've had so many people speak to me about this article since it's been published, around the exact thing that I think I've experienced, which was and still remains a challenging experience of being alone. But once you work out what aloneness can be, there is something extremely liberating and satisfying about it. And people have reflected the same experience. And for me, it was finding value in the experiences that I love to do by myself, walking by myself, making art, learning how to play the guitar again, really feeding the part of me that I think we can easily learn to neglect when we see ourselves as being in service, you know, and not in a negative way, in a loving way. You're in service to partners, you're in service to children, you're in service to friendships. When all of that is taken away and you simply have a question about yourself, the selfish, you know, where we've always seen that as a negative, it's actually a wonderful thing to explore. What is it that creates that excitement in me, the wonder, the aliveness that I think I remember feeling as a young person when I would wander the world, sometimes by myself.
What's on your selfish list?
Oh, beautiful question. On my selfish list is a whole lot of stuff that I found out that has been thrilling to me, and it probably has been my whole life, but I had sort of let it lay dormant throughout, you know, the period of, you know, having children and setting up homes and blah, 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 blah. So it's things like making art, which I've reinvigorated. I'm writing and reading for pleasure. I'm teaching myself guitar again. I mean, very dorky and possibly also linked in. There's a Venn diagram, I'm sure, with midlife crisis as well. But it's just, it feels like a wonderful, oh, I remember you, you know, kind of relationship with myself again, finding a way to, reinvigorate that space that I guess I had at some point.
And so how long have you been living the solo life now? How long has it been?
We're nearly a year. So a couple of months off a year. And I am very, so interested in this idea of single, solo, you know, what that looks like in this world that we live in, because I think it's so related to how we're told of our worth. I know a lot of people experience this, you know, for very extended periods of time, and I'm fresh to this scene. But it's really interesting to sit in this space that's on that outer of that nuclear family, I suppose, and sort of think about your worth in that context.
In this new life, you're also alone with Crohn's disease. Does that make being alone harder?
It's a really beautiful question, because I think the fragilities that we live with that sort of intersect with this, you know, the vulnerability of aloneness, it can make it feel more profound, I suppose. When you look into a future and you think, gosh, what's going to happen? You know, I only have myself now, and, you know, financially and physically and the health and the larger story of chronic illness and the requirement for care. Yeah, it's something that really does impact me, I think, in a grief kind of way, you know, where you sort of, I think chronic illness always has that sometimes underneath it, this sense of trying to come to terms with it for its long-term impact on you. It changes throughout the different stages in your life. It affects you when you're trying to have children. It affects you when you first meet people. It affects you in terms of how you can build a career and work. And now I also understand its impact as I become an older person and what that might look like. Makes me a bit nervous, I have to say, being very, very honest.
Do you still feel lonely from time to time?
I do. I do still feel lonely from time to time. And it's definitely those points where having people who love and know you are just at hand. They're just there. It felt for me, and I had a lot of friends contact me saying, hey, you can call me at 3 o'clock in the morning if you've just got a random thing to say. But I think the reality is it's sort of also, I think, coming to acceptance of sometimes that pain that you feel in that aloneness, I suppose, in sometimes when things are tough, that you having your own resilience is a wonderful thing, but it can hurt as well. And I think that's just part of what coming to terms with this really looks like.
How about your relationships with your children? Have they changed?
Yeah, I think they have. I think it's my youngest, who's now 11, was really concerned about it. And he is like pretty much the poster boy. He says he wants to go out and tell all the children that getting divorced is the best thing that can ever happen. Because I think what it does, possibly, and it's everyone's stories are so different and we've all got different things that we have to deal with. But in our particular circumstance, it's really meant that our relationship with our children, that's what's centered now, you know. So no more is our relationship the center of the family dynamic. Now we are both able to really focus in on the fact that we're parents together and that this is the new focus for us all. And of course, you know, if you're an 11-year-old child, you're pretty stoked about that. And the 19-year-old as well that we have, she's in the same boat. I think she sees us as adults through an adult, a more adult lens as well, and can appreciate us as separate individuals. So it's been a really positive experience actually for our family in that way.
If you were asked to give advice for someone finding themselves alone for the first time or after a long time, what would it be?
Gosh, I think some advice that I sort of received as well is that it does get easier. You do learn and you begin to understand how to love yourself in a new framework. You know, you are caused, I think, through it to really challenge some stuff, and that challenge can end up being this wonderful bounty. But I also think that it's reasonable and absolutely understandable to feel the pain of loneliness and being alone. And that's something very, very serious, I think. And I think connecting out, going to have a coffee, finding ways that you can interact in the world and feel a relationship to it is a really important thing as well. I think it's an important thing to acknowledge with friends that you might have going through it, that contact is still such an important part of being a human.
And I guess also not having contact is also part of being a human.
That's it. Look at you. You need to write that complete essay now, because that's a beautiful reflection. I think we don't really get taught about that as well as perhaps we could, that outside of the dynamics of relationships and friendships and parents and children and all the beautiful ways that we are human, we are also here alone. And I think that needs to become something that we're less afraid of, and we are given toolkits to understand how we can better find the absolute benefits of solitude.
Before I let you go, Jacinta, just one question. What sparked you writing about this and sharing your insights?
That's a great question, because I always do wonder why I do this, because I have written a couple of books where it's really self-examination. But I do think, and I've found it often with those books and with things that I've written, that the micro aspects of our life, while they might be very different to the person beside you, they often illuminate our connection to each other. And I find it thoroughly restorative to find language to explain something. And then it's a beautiful experience to speak to you today, for example, Susanna, in sharing some wondering about it. You know, that we have a connection with a lot of these ways that we're human. And I think, even though sometimes I get worried about, gosh, stop sharing things, I think there's something very helpful for myself and, you know, in a public conversation around these things.
It's a pleasure to speak with you today, Jacinta. Thank you very much.
It is such a pleasure to speak to you, Susanna. Let's do this more often.
That's broadcaster and writer Jacinta Parsons from the ABC in Melbourne.